In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, you know it. Let's all go. Monday means Alan here on Downtown. Alan Adams in studio with us for Pass the Popcorn. Happy Monday.
And to you as well.
Great to see you. We were chatting in the break here. You were hanging out with my bride there on Saturday night, big bash at the Maine Discovery Museum.
Yeah, they did a 90s themed sort of party. There was a cocktail party at Queen City Cinema Club, and then followed by an event at the museum proper. And yeah, it was a super good time. You know, and let's be real, the 90s, those were my glory days. Like, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm like, you know, I'm wearing two different flannel shirts. You know, I got my hat on backwards. It's just like, oh man, it feels good. Feels like 21. You know what I mean? So that was a really good time. And you know, and it was like, it was such a well handled, well organized event. Like it was just, you know, the crowd was good. Everybody seemed to be having a good time. And yeah. And as I said, anything that celebrates the 1990s, I am on board with.
Yeah. Abby showed me a few pictures. I think the costumes I was most impressed with were the people who came as the Ice Storm.
Yes. I saw them at the pregame sort of cocktail party. And I'm like, what the heck is. And then one of them turned around and said, and had a little sign that said, "Thank you, lineman." And I'm like, oh, and then once it clicked, I'm like, that is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That is awesome. Because yeah, I mean, few things say 90s in Maine than the Ice Storm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it got cold out there since last we chatted, man.
Right. I mean, I suppose it's mid-November. It had to happen at some point, but yeah. You know, it's just, you know, they tease me with these, you know, shorts wearing days at the beginning of November. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm not going to say it would be better if it was just cold the whole time, because obviously that would have meant I didn't get to wear shorts. But yeah, it's just a little reminder of what's coming.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about Stella. When we walked this morning, Ginger was pretty oblivious to my plight. She's like, "Why do you want to go home? It's walkie time."
Nope. Stella doesn't care. If nothing else, she actually digs it, particularly right now, a little bit more, because everyone has cleared their leaves to the side of the street, but they have not been taken away yet. So that we had some rain, it got cold, so they're a little firmer than they've been in the past. And so, but man, there's nothing Stella loves more than walking through a pile of leaves.
And for Ginger, putting her head in that pile of leaves, wondering what treasure she might find.
Yep, she likes to walk through. I can only dream of enjoying anything as much as my dog enjoys doing her business on a pile of leaves.
Oh, yeah, Ginger, like, that's top of the world.
Loves it so much, and it's just like, you know, you're just sitting there, it's like, well, you know what? We all find our joy where we can.
Which is why whenever, you know, Graham and his buddies are out there jumping in leaves, I'm like, do you know what's in there? Because I've seen some of it.
They're kids, good for them.
That's why he doesn't get sick.
That's right.
That's the story there. Well, let's talk movies. You saw a couple since last we spoke, and a couple that are getting pretty good buzz too.
Yeah, it was an interesting movie weekend, because these two films are both they're both very good in very different ways, both appealing to very different audiences. I had the chance to go see the latest movie, the latest entry in the MCU, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, and I also got to see writer-director Martin McDonagh's latest, The Banshees of Inisherin. Which one would you like to talk about first, Rich?
Let's do Banshees.
Okay. I saw the initial, you know, sort of the trailers, and I heard a little bit about this movie, and I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, it's Martin McDonagh, like, I've enjoyed his work in the past. Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, he's directed them together before. He did In Bruges with them, and I'm like, okay, so this is clearly going to be a good movie. But then I get a text from Bruce Pratt, and Bruce doesn't like communicate unless he has to. Unless there's something that he really needs to let you know. And he texted me to tell me how good this movie was. And I was like, I sent him a message back. I was like, I was already stoked, but this puts it over the top. I'm so excited. I actually wondered if I was going to have to venture a little farther afield to go see this movie, but it is playing at actually a couple of local cinemas. So yes, so The Banshees of Inisherin, it is, like I said, Martin McDonagh. I mentioned in Bruges, he's probably best known for Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. But this movie, it's a period piece set in the 1920s on a small fictional island, the titular Inisherin, off the coast of Ireland. It's during the time of one of the assorted civil wars that were going on in Ireland at that time. The island is close enough where they can actually see cannon fire, and they can hear the guns, they can see the smoke, but they're also far enough away where it doesn't really impact them all that much. It's a very small place, pastoral, idyllic. Everybody is, everybody knows each other, small town kind of situation. And in this place, we have a gentleman by the name of Padraig. That's Colin Farrell. Nice guy, simple guy. Like he has some livestock. He lives in a small house with his sister Siobhan, played by Carrie Breton, who's excellent in this movie, just sort of keeps a low key life. He's not someone who worries too much about the world around him. Like, he's content to go through his day and then head down the pub, have a pint, shoot the breeze for a little while, just live that life. And his closest companion is a gentleman by the name of Colm Doherty. That's Brendan Gleeson. He's a folk musician, talented fiddle player, songwriter, they go and have some beers and shoot the proverbial shit, as they say. When we start the movie, he goes down to Colm's house. He's going to pick him up. They're going to go to the pub. And Colm's just kind of sitting there in the living room, like, doesn't acknowledge the knocks or the shouts through the window or anything. Just kind of sits there. Drake's like, well, it's kind of weird, but I'll just go down to the pub and I'll wait for him. Goes down to the pub. Colm shows up and basically says, I don't like you anymore. We're not friends. And Padraig's like, what? Did I get drunk and say something? Did I do something? Like, if I did, like, I'm really sorry. And the answer's no, I just don't like you anymore. And as you can imagine, for a person in a small town who doesn't have a lot of people, like, that sort of that sort of abrupt end to a long-standing relationship, well, it throws you for a loop. And it only gets worse when Padraig tries to push back a little bit and Colm goes to extreme measures that I will not spoil here, but extreme measures in an effort to make to be left alone. And we watch as this sort of spiral happens and the relationship deteriorates. Meanwhile, Padraig's sister has issues of her own happening. Like, there are big changes in her life that are coming along. There's a young man named Dominic, played by Barry Keoghan, who he sort of latches on to Padraig, and he's dealing with some struggles at home and trying to figure out what to do with himself, what to do with his life. And all the while, he's just racking his brain. He's like, why is this happening? Why doesn't he, what happened? Why does my friend not want to be my friend anymore? And the situation grows more and more extreme until it culminates in a tragic comedic, let's say, situation that turns things, sends things going down a very dark path. Not going to go any more specific than that because, again, I got thrown by a lot of the stuff that happened in this movie in a good way. I feel like it's only fair that others who watch it should have that same experience. It's a real gut punch of a movie. It's also very funny, which is, weird, but also kind of McDonagh's stock and trade. That's kind of his deal. Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I'm not sure if I've seen a better sort of cinematic representation of the sort of toxic side effects that come from men's inability to express their feelings. It's, you know, that inability to engage like truthfully on an emotional level, that bottling up of you know, of resentment, of hurt, you know, and this is a time, you know, this is a time and place where, you know, men were expected to be stoic,
right,
and hard, and, you know, and not, you know, and not share that side of their, of themselves, of their worlds. And so it's this wonderful sort of representation of that, while also really pointing up the deep importance of connection that we have as human beings. You know, and there's, I mean, there's familial connection, and we see some of that. There's romantic connection. We see a few feints at that. But then there's that sort of that chosen connection, the friendship connection, where, you know, that sense of that bond of fraternity and whatnot. And the idea of having that, and then having it sort of just taken away for reasons that you don't understand. You know, and just watching as this poor guy who has built his entire life around just being nice. Like, he just tries to be nice to people. And to have him struggle with the reality of losing someone that he considered his closest friend for no discernible reason. It's just, it's a really fascinating sort of exploration of that idea. And then you've got two just phenomenal actors. Just, I mean, like tip top of their game performances from both Ferrell and Gleason. Like, the two of them together are just so, like, they're so phenomenal because they can do so much with so little. And when you're dealing with, you know, when you're dealing with early 20th century Irish dudes, you got to do a lot with a little,
right?
Because that's all they're going to, that's all they can do is a little. And so, but just like these stoic sort of veneers, and you get to see like the little, these little glimpses of the turmoil underneath, but everything's sort of suppressed and pushed down because that's what you do. And then, you know, and then when the moments of real raw, like, emotion come, sometimes from unexpected situations, it's just, it's that much more effective. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like, you see these guys as they are, you know, they can't push it down anymore. Like, it has to come out, and it comes out in ways and at times that might not be what you'd expect. Again, McDonough, it's just a masterclass. Like, I mean, his script is brilliant. Like, he does this, he juxtaposes the, you know, the sort of hardness of his characters with the sort of kind of bleak idyll of Ireland. Like, it's just like, it's just like, he's so good at telling these types of stories. And, you know, and when you have, guys who not only get who these people are, but they also, you know, get what McDonough does. You bring all these factors together, and what you get is a movie that, man, I don't know how things are going to play out over the coming months, but I have to assume that this is a movie that's going to get a lot of attention from the various award granting bodies, because it's quiet, it's powerful. It's really funny, and you'll cry too. Like, it's one of those movies that really has everything. And, I just feel really fortunate that I got a chance to see it.
Awesome. Well, if you like it and Bruce like it, pretty good chance I'm going to like it.
Yeah, it seems fair.
Looking forward to that. All right. What about Wakanda Forever?
I was nervous about this one. For a number of reasons, but I mean, obviously the big one, you know, the passing of Chadwick Boseman, you know, he was the Black Panther. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, and, you know, I love when actors treat every part with seriousness, with, you know, with genuine feeling. They try to create real people, and it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're Jackie Robinson or James Brown or, you know, the king of a fictional African country who has superpowers. Like, it's like, if, like, that was what Boseman did, was he really humanized everyone that he played. And so there was no question that his absence was going to be felt. There was also no question that this movie was going to happen. Considering the, you know, commercial, critical, cultural phenomenon that the first movie was, like there was no doubt they had to make a movie. Like that's just business. Like that's just the nature of the beast. The loss of Bozeman. So how do you do it? Like, you know, Ryan Coogler, he's a phenomenal filmmaker, but how do you do it? Like, can you do it? Like, what is the right thing to do? I was floored, honestly, by how well it was handled. Like, I mean, it's, you're threading a needle with this sort of thing. Like, you want to be, you know, respectful and of Chadwick Boseman's memory, but you also have to make a good movie, and you have to, and you're beholden to not only the micro story within the context of your own film, but the overarching storyline of the MCU machine, you know? So it's like, there are all these factors like coming at you from all these different directions. And yet one of the first thing I said to Sheridan when I walked out of this movie was, I can't believe how reverent this was to the memory of Chadwick Boseman. Like, he is present throughout this film, but never in a way that felt gratuitous or exploitative. Like, honestly, like, I don't know, like 99 times out of 100, like, something, there's a, you strike at least one false note. You would have to, but this is the one time, you know what I mean? Like, they really just found a way to tell this story, to tell an interesting, engaging superhero story while also, while also paying homage to their friend, to their lost friend. And, I was kind of blown away. I could sit here and go through the plot machinations. Like, it's, I mean, as story wise, as these movies go, it's not bad. You've got, we start with Shuri, that's T'Challa's sister, played by Letitia Wright, trying to come up with a something to help her brother, who is dying from an undisclosed illness, trying to find a way to save him. And then her mother, the Queen, played by Angela Bassett, who is just phenomenal in this movie, telling her that, you know, he's gone. And so, you know, it's remarkable because it's like you're getting a chance to watch the characters and the actors grieve at the same time, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know, and it's just, you know, I was surprised by how much it affected me, I think. Anyway, so we jump forward, in time, a year. You know, Wakanda is now on the global stage, and all the other countries are like, we would like some of your vibranium, please. And the Queen is like, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. And so they're viewed as sort of a geopolitical threat and all these things with their, you know, their advanced technologies and you know, their vast, you know, resource wealth. So obviously the solution is, well, we want some. So we're either going to try to figure out a way to take it from you. Or we're going to try to find some somewhere else. Turns out the latter actually happens, thanks to a machine developed at the behest of the CIA. They find a load of vibranium at the ocean floor. You know, there are some folks down there who aren't interested in giving up the vibranium. And that's when we meet Namor. The Submariner. He is however not from Atlantis in this film. This is not the undersea kingdom of Atlantis. I want to make sure I get it right, because they actually do it's a wonderful sort of transition. It's the name of their kingdom is Talokan, and it is basically the descendants of a group of Aztecs who discovered their own version of the vibranium infused plant that gives the Black Panther his powers when they were being forced out of their homes by the Spanish conquistadors. They, at the behest of their rain god, they take this in and they develop the ability to live underwater. And so they go underwater. And so they, that's where they've been for the past, you know, 5-6 centuries. But with, you know, with the surface world, sort of make, you know, sort of incurring on their territory, that's not acceptable. And so Namor comes up, he blames the Wakandans and demands that they find the person responsible for this machine that detects vibranium and bring this person to him. Gets complicated when we find out that the person responsible is actually a 19-year-old girl named Riri, played by Dominique Thorne, who is you know, a genius at MIT, but suddenly it's a little less palatable to hand over a, you know, a teenager to be probably brutally murdered by a bunch of, you know, undersea, you know, blue people. And then, and then the fight happens because, you know, you've got on the one side, you've got these two kingdoms that sort of exist outside the normal realm of geopolitics, both imbued with, you know, with incredible technology, you know, and the bordering on magic properties of vibranium, and they're going to fight each other. And it goes about as you'd expect, and I'm not gonna go any farther than that. I'm not gonna spoil anything, yes, they put all the pieces together, and what you get is a very, very much an MCU movie, which is good. Like that's, I think that's important in the grander context. But again, as I said, throughout, like we get through flashbacks or what have you, like Chadwick Boseman is a presence in this film, and that presence makes this a better movie. And I wasn't sure that would be the case. So it was interesting to see that sort of play out. Cause here's the thing, Ryan Coogler, is a legitimately great filmmaker. But he's one of the relative few who can transition to these sorts of big budget kinds of projects and still maintain that sort of level of quality.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen a lot of good directors get thrown the keys to these things and just not, and it just doesn't go well. So it's great to see that someone like him is sort of still, you know, in that kind of franchise mode while still sort of doing his own, you know, passion projects or what have you. It's a beautiful looking movie. Again, it's subject to some of the sort of flatness, the CGI flatness that you get with these effects laden movies, but the production design is so fantastic. You get this, there's the wonderful sort of Afrofuturist vibe that you get from Wakanda, and then I don't know if this is a word, I refer to it as Aztec futurism for the Undersea Kingdom, because that's beautiful too. Like, you know, and they've done this wonderful job of creating these very vivid. These vivid worlds in which these characters operate. You know, the costume design is great. It's a really good looking movie. In terms of performances, like this was always going to be where it kind of, where the rubber hit the road, because you're talking about a, you know, one of the best actors of his generation. He was the lead in these movies, and now it's like who takes the reins. And Letitia Wright is, look, I think her personal beliefs are kind of reprehensible, but she's very good in this. She's very good in this film. I don't know if she's quite up to shouldering the full load, but like she was the obvious choice to sort of headline this film. And I think she did an admirable job considering the multitude of pressures that must have been on her. I mentioned Angela Bassett, like there are people like there are whispers of a potential Oscar campaign for her for this role, which would be a first for the MCU. Look, man, I don't know if it's going to happen, but I buy it. Like she's great. She's great in this movie. The gentleman who plays Namor is also very good. It'll be interesting to see. Tenacuerta is his name, and it'll be interesting to see how he's integrated into the MCU going forward. Like he's very He's got a nice charisma to him. You know, Namor's always been a weird sort of gray area Marvel figure, so it'll be, you know, it's nice to have a little bit of that flexibility with regard to how you want him to be treated in the grander context. Dominic Thorne is good in this film, although she doesn't get a ton to do, but we're going to be seeing a lot of her because she's going to be headlining one of the upcoming MCU television series. Lupita Nyong'o is here. Again, another incredibly gifted performer. She does really well. She's great. Winston Duke, who plays M'Baku in this. Like, I love Winston Duke, and this is a great part for him that he's really sort of leaned into and embraced. And it, on and on. Like, it's one of those casts, you know, and that's not even talking about. I haven't even mentioned, you know, Martin Freeman as CIA agent Everett Ross, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Wow.
Oh, I want to make sure I get the name right. She is the she's the CIA director, and her name is Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. I have a hunch that she's also going to be known to have another title on here down the road, but that's neither here nor there. That's personal theory is all. So, you know, you put it all together and look, is it too long? I mean, it's like 2 hours and 45 minutes long. Like, it's probably too long. The third act gets a little wonky, and they have their sort of, the sort of standard MCU tack of, like, you know, big fight on a bigger piece of transportation, whether it's in the sky or on the ocean. Like, at least they're not fighting a big monster with lasers. Like, so we'll take it. But all that aside, it was really, it really felt like as effective a tribute to Chadwick Boseman while also being very much an MCU movie as it possibly could have been. And so my initial misgivings happily were misplaced. This turned out to be quite a good movie.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to seeing both of those. By the way, I told Carrie this. I ended up watching Weird.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was fun.
Isn't it good?
That was great. It wasn't a great movie, but it was great fun.
Exactly.
I loved all the surprise visits. I love the people we know playing people we knew.
Yep.
It was, and I like you. You said it was going to go weird at the end. I thought that was a perfect ending.
Yes, exactly. Very, very much in keeping with the rest of the film, I thought.
Yes, definitely. All right. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.